Hi, welcome back to Winged and Ready. I am very stoked to be sitting in our New York City studio at UBS with my colleague, Paul Shao. He works in our chief investment office, and they have been putting out this groovy new report, started this year, and the second report just dropped. Paul, why don't you introduce yourself and give us a little bit of a taste of what this new report's all about?
Yeah, thanks, Diane. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on. And then thanks for covering the report. Maybe a little bit about me. So I've been an economist for, I guess, my entire career, about 14 years at this point. and I sit in the chief investment office within UBS Wealth Management. We've been noticing that a lot of FAs have clients who are business owners, CEOs, might be interested in sort of harnessing the power of the CIO office with its research, but having something more tailored towards their needs. And so that was the genesis of this report that myself and Jason Dreho, who's the head of asset allocation at the GWM, have come up with. So we are on our second edition for Q2 2024. The report is, I think, pretty long, around 70 pages.
Yeah.
But for readers and for people who use it, we try to make it as modular as possible, giving guideposts, section summaries, an overall executive summary of the report, so people can pick and choose what they find to be important and what they find to be interesting. So just to go over it very quickly for your listeners, it's broken up into four sections, the first being an overview of the economy,
mm-hmm.
as all good economists like to do. And so we touch upon growth, inflation, as well as policy rates. The second might be more relevant to business owners, which is taking a deeper look into the operating environment, how healthy are consumers, labor markets, financing conditions, as well as real estate. The third section is diving a bit deeper into capital markets, capital raising. So that's your venture capital, private equity, IPO, mergers and acquisitions market. And then lastly, we touch upon, it's called politics and geopolitical risks, but it's really just our sense of risks in the market. So mm-hmm. in Q1, we focused more on politics. In Q2, we focused more on the durability and the trajectory of the U.S. dollar. So yeah. I know I spoke a lot.
Yeah, no, but it's interesting. And I looked at both of the reports, and I love it because of exactly what you said. You can really dial in certain areas. You can get some pithy charts and graphs mm-hmm. and radials in there that really, it's like a meter. It goes from red to yellow to green to show you where things are. It's you don't have to be a rocket scientist to translate the information. But the lens, like you said, harnessing the power of the CIO office and pulling forward the data across macroeconomic conditions, operating environment, M&A activity, and then all of the environmental risks that are covered and how that comes together specifically for a CEO or a business owner. And oh, hey, by the way, also important for entrepreneurs who are starting
That's
their
right.
businesses.
Yeah.
So anybody out there who owns a business, wants to own a business, or even sell a business, this information is critical.
Oh, we hope so, yes.
Yeah. So you went over high level about the report, and I was fortunate enough to sit down with you about a month ago to talk about the first quarter. But let's start, you know, chatting a little bit about what's different between first and second quarter. And you know, everyone's been talking about the Fed and a slowdown. So slowdown, I think you said what slowdown in the report?
I think that was the one of the earlier titles. We switched it to higher for longer.
Okay.
And I think the most recent Fed meeting today sort of clarified that stance, which is great. We don't have to reprint all the reports. But if we take a look at the dials that you mentioned that capture what's happening in the economy, where we break it out into you know, what's growth doing, what's inflation doing, what are the short-term and long-term rates doing, all those indicators are slightly stronger in Q2 versus Q1. And I think that makes sense. It coincides with a lot of economists on the street revising their growth forecast upwards for 2024, which is really unusual in a time when you have interest rates so high, and especially when the perception from the Federal Reserve is that they're keeping policy tighter than the couple of rate cuts that they signaled earlier this year. So growth is stronger, rates are stronger, and that's sort of the basis that sets the tone for the rest of the report, because in this environment, raising capital is much more difficult as we go into the market section.
Mm-hmm.
And then for operational costs, obviously the cost of borrowing is more disproportionately affecting smaller, younger business owners than larger enterprises that can possibly looking to either issuing debt in high yield or investment grade markets that smaller places just can't. So high for longer, I think, is the general tone that feeds through the report, and you can really see it affecting all sorts of different sectors.
Would you say that's been a shift over the first quarter or a continuation?
I think that's a great question. I think it's a bit of both. It's a continuation because growth and inflation have been surprising on the upside for the last couple of quarters. And certainly I think how fast the U.S. economy recovered after the pandemic is still something a lot of folks are still trying to grapple with. And so it's a very similar story in the first couple of months of 2024. Yes, it's still the growth is still robust, continuing off of a 2023 trend, but we didn't expect it to be so strong and labor markets to be, you know, to be printing out over 300,000 monthly job creation numbers. Yeah. At this point in the cycle.
And I know our base case in the firm is still to see two rate cuts in 2024, which now feels like it's going against the grain a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that echoes somewhat of the, I don't want to say confidence, but some of the assurances that you listed prior, that higher for longer, but we're not falling off of a cliff here.
That's right. I think the verbiage we use in the report is delayed but not derailed when it comes to rate cuts. So we believe that having a rate cut imminently might be very difficult given how strong inflation and the job markets have been. But if you just zoom out a bit, it's clear that the labor market and inflation are both cooling. It wasn't that long ago that inflation was, you know, printing almost double digits on an annual basis, and we're back down, you know, close but not quite to the Fed's target of 2%. And you can see that even more pronounced in either core CPI or core PCE ex shelter. So it's really these shelter prices and the way they calculate the inflationary effect that's pushing up the headline number. And then from a labor market front, while job growth has been strong, the higher than expected impact from immigration has absorbed a lot of these job gains. And from a demand perspective, both wages and job openings have cooled, which is something that we, the market, and the Fed wants to see before they start cutting rates. So I think the idea that delayed but not derailed is still there. Having rate cuts imminently, it might be hard, but we are not discounting them completely this year.
I mean, there are two sides to every coin, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the pundits probably have been focusing a lot on the delay or potential cancellation of rate cuts at all in 2024. Have we been overreactive? Are we still seeing a pickup potentially in M&A activity, IPOs?
So let me split your question into two parts, which is, you know, getting what's the impact of higher for longer rates, and then specifically for capital raising. If you look at risk asset markets, I think they're actually quite well behaved. You know, the S&P is still over 5,000. The 10-year Treasury is not over 5%. So for us, at least, I think the market's a little upset, but not completely overturned by a sort of shift of tone from the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
That said, when it comes to capital raising, we thought we might see a more pronounced pickup in Q1, and you had a handful of, you know, bigger names, Reddit being one of them in the IPO space. But overall, capital raising is just still quite muted and still quite difficult. There are signs of green shoots, and issuance from high yield and investment grade still have been quite strong. But I think the catalyst for that is really for more confidence to be made for lower rates in order for capital raising in M&A, IPO space, even VC to really pick up.
Okay. And to circle back on the operating environment, we touched on a couple of the areas, but with rates being higher, there's been in New York City a lot of transition of people coming back into the city. What are you seeing in the real estate area? Is there anything of importance that's been a shift from Q1 to Q2?
So we like to use this indicator from Castle, which is a firm that looks at card swipes from different buildings. And their readings show nationally, I think, building vacancy is still down around 40-50% compared to where we were pandemic. So it's certainly better than it once was, but overall, just people returning to the office, even New York, even though today might feel a little different with a lot of people out with the better weather, it's still down from where we were before, and that's affecting the office space. The good news for commercial real estate and for those who fear a much broader meltdown or sparking fears of 2008 should take into consolation that office space is just 15-16% of the overall market, and in terms of the balance sheet impact for smaller regional banks, we looked into it. It is not the best situation to be in, but we don't see a high likelihood of a meltdown like the financial crisis emanating from the real estate space. So demand, I think, is still weak. Loans are still hard to get for commercial, for office space especially. Mm-hmm. So definitely less activity there. For residential, it's a rate story and it's an inventory story. Inventories are still historically quite low. New starts have been volatile, and it takes a couple of years for these newer homes to be online. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of first-time homeowners, and for even existing homeowners, having rates really high is just putting buyers on the sidelines, making rent a much more affordable option. So prices might remain elevated, but the actual transactions and commissions that it might have for realtors might be adversely impacted in this environment.
Yeah. Or apparently even living with your parents. I heard that statistic is up significantly from where it once used to be. I think we're at higher than, I want to say it was World War II levels of people under the age of 30 living with their parents. It's extraordinarily high right now.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
It is crazy. I think it's awful.
Are you speaking from personal experience?
And it's also a little creepy that Castle can read all the card swipes of people going in and out of buildings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. So as all of these things culminate together, at the top of our conversation, we were talking about how this information can collate to be a specific tool for executives. Should executives be thinking about things differently versus where we were in the first quarter?
With the higher for longer thesis, I don't think that the current environment is wholesale different than the first quarter. Mm-hmm. But for folks looking for the cost of borrowing to go down in the short term, that might, in order to make some investment plans, that
right.
probably might be delayed for one or two quarters or for a couple of months. And for those hoping for a much more active capital market environment, I think that's also pushed off for a couple of quarters as well. So I think that's just generally consistent with just CapEx plans also declining across the board if you look at the Federal Reserve regional CapEx plans. So we're in this sort of wait and see environment until we get more clarity about the direction of rates, amongst other things going on in the economy.
Yeah, not even muddling through, wait and see. It feels like it's been close to 24 months of that.
Yeah, and I think that, in 3 months from now, the election will be even closer. And that's something that, we get questions from clients from as well. So that's another, I think, wait and see catalyst that, mm-hmm. that investors and business owners see in the horizon, too.
Yeah. So that's a good transition into talking about geopolitical tensions mm-hmm. and what you bucketed earlier as just general risks out in the landscapes that you're assessing. So what should executives be thinking about in terms of risks and geopolitical tensions?
I try to think of just risks in a couple of parts. So you have the geopolitical risks that usually manifest in either higher oil prices or a flight to quality when it comes to risk assets. And so for that, I think certainly the tensions in the Middle East, the conflict in Eastern Europe aren't great situations. But the prices of oil has been quite stable for the last couple of weeks. I know it's picked up a little bit recently. But unless that flares, unless tensions flare up even more so from here, we actually expect the price of oil to remain quite stable for now. So that should be a relief for a lot of companies that are relying or really watching closely fuel costs. So that's sort of geopolitical tensions. I think on the next front is sort of the election. What could a second Trump or Biden term look like in the coming months? And given that we're basically in the general election swing of things, we're getting more and more signs of the legislative agenda that both candidates want to pursue. The CIO actually has this pretty good report series called Election Watch, where you can go take a look at the impact for different sectors. But all in all, both candidates are unlikely to have a unified government that they both enjoyed when they first in their first term, so it's hard to see them passing a lot of their legislative agenda without this really huge advantage going into it. So we think that the fiscal impact is actually quite limited in the near term, no matter who's president. Now, obviously, there are things that an individual president can do in some sectors that are different, given a blue president versus a red president. But the overall macro impact, I think, is still quite muted. And then probably the third sort of risk is the more structural risk. I think for me, just reading the headlines, there's been a lot more hand-wringing around the level, the fast rising levels of debt, and that sort of feeds into the election and how durable the dollar actually is. But if anything, if people thought the dollar was, if debt was too high, you wouldn't see the extended strength in the dollar that you've seen over the last couple months. And I think, you know, against some currencies like the Japanese yen, the dollar is actually the strongest point since I've been walking on earth.
Wow.
And so I don't think investors are quite willing to get rid of the dollar anytime soon, and so we should expect some dollar strength until we get more rate clarity. So I feel like all my answers depend on what's going on with rates, which is just the easy way to pivot. But for a lot of these things, it really does depend on, you know, what's the clarity we're going to get from here on out.
Yeah. So looking towards the end of the year then for further clarity. Does that mean we should all just enjoy the summer?
I certainly would hope so. I think in the near term, you know, folks like me are really paying attention to what growth is doing, what inflation is doing, how the labor markets react, because I think for the first time for the first time, at least in very recent memory, it's actually unclear for a lot of people what the Fed's going to do.
Yeah.
Are they going to hold? Are they going to cut? Are they even going to raise? We think the bar to raise is quite high, but it's not a 0% probability that it probably was much closer to as the year started. In fact, if I told myself the Fed's going to hike rates this year, you know, back in January 1st, I'd probably think I was a little crazy. But we're in this environment where things are quite uncertain, and uncertainty is certainly not a great thing for business owners and for markets.
Yeah.
And so that's where we are now.
Do you think that rates has been overshadowing earnings?
I don't think so, and I think earnings has been the driver of why you have the Nasdaq and the S&P still quite doing quite well this year after a historic 2023. So the earnings picture looks quite good. What we think is that we in 2024 after 2023, where you had this large concentration in terms of market performance and, mm-hmm. I guess, attention on earnings in the Magnificent Seven. We thought that it'd be a little more broad-based this year, but we're still waiting for Q1 results to really solidify that call.
Mm. Speaking of Q1, let's go back to the report.
Sure, yeah.
How have you seen the Q1 report used so far? And also, what can we expect next?
Yeah, we're actually really pleased with the reaction that we've received so far. We've done a handful of events with advisors, including the one I did with you, which was great.
Thank you.
I know it's also been used in our internal, I think, Business Owners Quarterly, led by James Jack, which was great. And I know Jason has been using it in events in Miami as well. We thought Q1 would be a good soft launch, and we worked with different stakeholders to really hone the report, hone the messaging. And Q2 is where we're a little more splashy, and we got a web page. It's on the FA social, it's on the IC portal. We've done a video with the UBS trending team. It's on another podcast too. So we're trying to invest a little more in marketing events, and we have had a couple of requests for events so far.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so that's
where, a good success.
Yeah, we're always happy to know that it's not just us reading the report, and it's actually being used. So we're quite happy with the reaction so far.
And how would a listener access the report if they would like to see it, besides emailing me?
Yeah. Well, that should be number one. But there are a couple of ways. As I mentioned, it's on LinkedIn, I think, from the wealth management page, as well as my own and Jason Dreho's feeds, as well as the different podcasts, the Trending, your podcast.
UBS Trending is a great podcast, too. Anyone who's listening, if you don't subscribe to that, shout out to UBS Trending. You should subscribe to that.
Exactly. As well, it's on the wealth management public-facing homepage, too.
Cool. Have I missed any questions that I should have asked you?
No. I think this is great.
Any further thoughts that you want to give to the listeners to wrap it up?
Please pay attention to, I think, the week of July 20th or 21st. I forgot which was the Monday. But basically, Wednesday of that week is when we plan for the Q3 release.
So okay.
I hope your listeners will look us up at that point.
And we can also check in to see if people have been enjoying their summers as we're
in
wait and see mode.
Definitely.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Paul. I really appreciate it. And again, we've been talking about the CEO Macro Briefing Book for the second quarter of 2024. If you would like a copy, feel free to give me a shout. My number is 516-745-8964, and my email is diane.johnston@ubs.com. again, that's diane.johnston@ubs.com. thanks again.
Thank you.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business, that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products or services we offer. For more information, visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA SIPC.